Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Welcome to the first episode of 2022. Coming to you from a unique position, the first time through this pandemic there, I thought I was going to get through it unscathed. I am in COVID protocol, folks, and I'm doing fine right now, but was pretty ill there for a couple of days. I was starting to feel a little smug about this thing. It, you know, 2+ years into it, was escaped at the first go around, and got myself fully vaccinated, because yes, I do believe in vaccines, not just for myself, my family, but also for my patients and my pet family. So yes, I got fully vaccinated, and apparently not very few of us are going to get through this unscathed, and lo and behold, I caught it while I was at the North American Veterinary Conference. Great precautions were taken there. I was out in Orlando. Everybody had to be masked up while inside. There was good social distancing going on. About half the attendance of that was normally there was there. And lo and behold, despite my vaccine status and being careful, came back with a slight cough and kind of feeling a little off. Got tested and lo and behold, positive. Within a couple of days there, I was pretty cripplingly ill. Wow. You know, and this is, I guess, the Omicron variant, supposedly, that is supposed to be a bit milder. And I'll tell you, it didn't feel that mild to me. And I have a full vaccine status on board. And for a couple of days there, I literally couldn't get out of bed or off the couch. But last couple of days, I made a huge turnaround. I am pretty much just about symptom free at this point, feeling great. And on, I guess, a plus side, I have an abundance of what I don't normally have, which is time. So I thought it'd be a wonderful time to podcast to all of you wonderful people. So happy belated New Year to everybody. I hope all are well out there and staying safe and not having to go through what I've been through the past week. But again, I'm coming out the other side of this thing. I tested faint positive today, which is a big progress from 2 days ago, which was pretty strong positive still. So just biding my time day to day, staying home and just waiting until I get that negative test so I can go back to work. But for today, I am all yours. So what are we talking about today? So, you know, I go to the NAVC, North American Veterinary Conference. We're there to get continuing education credits to keep our licenses current. You need, in the state of Florida, 32 credits every 2 years. Every credit represents an hour of training, and the conferences provide us that. The conferences also have exhibit halls where there's wonderful educational tools for us, as well as new equipment that we can peruse and purchase for our practices. It's just an exciting event, recharges the batteries, and most importantly, I come back so excited because my medicine, my surgery, my nutritional information is all updated. And one of the things I want to talk to you about today is one of the very important topics that has been in the national pet media, specifically as it pertains to dog nutrition, and that is the FDA dilated cardiomyopathy situation. That's the deadly cardiac disease that the FDA had linked to 16 in particular grain-free diets. So just a quick review on that. Back in 2018, a group of cardiologists in the Baltimore area were seeing a big uptick of this disease called dilated cardiomyopathy. It is a deadly disease. It's got an insidious onset. Average life expectancy is very short after the time of diagnosis. It's very tragic. It used to be a very genetically related disease that we did not see too often. Namely, we saw it in Great Danes and Doberman Pinschers occasionally, in German Shepherds. I think those were the only three breeds I'd ever seen it in prior to recently. But these cardiologists started seeing it in Shih Tzu Schnauzers, even like Chihuahuas, and hardly giant braids there. And the question was, why? How did this make it into these patients' genomes? And the truth is, it didn't make it into the genomes. It appeared to be a nutritional problem. And they all compared their notes. And the one common denominator was tracing the incidence of this disease back to these dogs being fed exclusively these boutique-style grain-free diets that have become quite popular in the last many years. So they petitioned the FDA to look into this. The FDA did, in fact, study it, looked at these diets, pulled all of the medical information from these patients, expanded their search even further, and in 2019 published the 16-diet list of the grain-free diets listed in order of incidence of the disease that were implicated most in the incidence of dilated cardiomyopathy. And so that's where we left it. I gave sort of a little bit of an update not too long ago, but still, you know, there hadn't been a real concrete specific one until recently. So the AVMA and the American Animal Hospital Association, in conjunction with FDA, put out some new information, and they've sort of expanded it. As it turns out, the dilated cardiomyopathy situation is more complex than just grain-free. That's really just one part of it. And what they've expanded it into is what's called BEG. BEG, so B as in boy, E-G. And that acronym stands for boutique style. The E is for exotic proteins and ingredients. And the G is for grain-free. So we already know about the grain-free, and no big secret there, but let's expand on the boutique style. We'll start with that and just take one acronym at a time. So boutique style really refers to diets that are generally small companies. They're, you know, these little startups, and they have fancy little labels and often fancy little packaging, and they're very attractive for, like, groomers, breeders, you know, the new doggy daycare spas that have become so popular, where dogs go and they can get groomed and do some daycare and have some training and, you know, fun with other dogs. And these are awesome places, but, you know, as a little extra, you know, service they can offer to the customers. Hey, let's offer some of these non-mainstream diets that they could take a look at. It seems that they're often pretty tasty, but by boutique style, though, you know, obviously they're not mainstream, and that doesn't make them bad. Non-mainstream does not mean bad. I don't want to create that sentiment, but I will. By non-mainstream, is that they're not really following the typical minimum standards that we expect as veterinarians, anyway, to provide a good product that's not just of a good nutritional standard, but also one that is going to provide good, consistent nutrition and you know, meets those minimum standards. So the first of that is AAFCO certification, American Association of Feed Control Officials. That's a voluntary participation. And basically, most of the bigger companies are going to participate in this. And they're essentially inviting this watchdog agency to come in and inspect their facilities, inspect their ingredients, their quality control, to make sure they're meeting minimum standards. By itself, I will tell you, it's not magical. The standards are, you know, not super impressive, but it does create, you know, sort of a floor as to, you know, this is the starting point by which we want to see these diets at least engaging in these minimum standards. So you look for that AAFCO label, AAFCO. It's always clearly right on, and usually in the top left corner of the bag, but it's somewhere on the bag. But the boutique style diets very often are lacking these things. It, you know, they're just not going there, and that's, again, it's a starting point. It's not the end all be all. There are some pretty lousy diets out there that get AAFCO certification, but it's a starting point. The second criteria that the boutique style diets are almost 100% lacking is publicly published and available transparent feeding trials or evidence of feeding trials whatsoever. So feeding trials really should be being conducted on these diets. They formulate them before they go to market. Ideally, you want a minimum of 5 years of feeding trials. Most of the better companies out there are doing a minimum of 7. the feeding trials are ongoing. So after the 7 years, they don't just give up on those test subjects. They're also continuing to watch them after the fact, longevity studies, measuring ins and outs, watching their stool production, looking at their coat quality, checking their body condition, looking for disease or lack thereof, basically looking to make sure that the claims of the diet are being proven in real life. You can have a formulated diet that is designed to accomplish certain things, but in practice doesn't necessarily get us there. So that would be life stage diets. So like a puppy formulation or a kitten formulation, are we getting that good growth curve? We're looking at the adult diet. Are we maintaining good musculature? We're looking at lifestyle diets or the high performance or the lazy, you know, low metabolic diets. And, you know, there's a whole number of criteria that we're trying to fulfill necessarily, and we want to prove it. And so the boutique style diets can make all kinds of claims, but they're not proving them in large measure. They're really not proving much of anything, even longevity and just general health. So feeding trials are huge. So that's something very lacking. And then lastly, and this is also hugely important, I believe every company that manufactures food should have at least one veterinary clinical nutritionist on staff. A veterinary clinical nutritionist is a veterinarian like me that has a licensed or their DVM, doctor of veterinary medicine, have a licensed degree to practice veterinary medicine, but they also have a PhD in nutrition. And that's huge. So they have two doctorates. They have a doctorate in veterinary medicine, they have a doctorate in nutrition, and all of the knowledge of nutrition and physiology that comes with that and how it uniquely pertains to nutrition. So when you look at, you know, the diets out there that really fulfill these criteria, there's only three. I'll leave it to you to figure that out. I don't want to be a cheerleader for any one diet. I try to never do that. But, you know, there's three. So you walk into Petco and you are bombarded with diets galore. Well, there's only three companies out there that are fulfilling all three of those criteria. So figure that out. So that's the kind of boutique style in a nutshell, is they're just not following any of the minimum guidelines. They're very small companies, again, and they're lacking expertise, the right processes in place. And as a result, you know, they might even have the right ingredients down, but they're not cooking them at the right temperatures, not mixing them at the right temperatures. The nutrients could denature, not interact the right way. Without all of the things that I just said, it's very challenging to make a good, consistently nutritious diet. It just doesn't grow on trees, and we have to always be aware of that. One last thing about boutique style diets: they also tend to use funny terminology that has no real bearing in pet food. Pet food nomenclature. They love to call their diets holistic. It doesn't mean anything. There's no such thing as a holistic diet. It, you know, we hear holistic, we're like, ooh, that sounds great. But it doesn't mean anything in the pet food industry. It's a useless term. All natural doesn't mean anything in the pet food industry. Case in point, when did you ever see a kibble that exists in nature? There certainly are not plants growing kibbles off of their branches. If it's in a kibble, it's not all natural. There could be, you know, some ingredients that may be all natural, but certainly that end product is not all natural. And this is my favorite one, is homemade. And I imagine maybe there's a boutique style diet here or there that is, you know, made in someone's kitchen. But I would imagine probably not many. So just don't be duped by these silly terms there's going to be pretty packaging and yin and yang symbols on them and stuff like that. And just know that some of the things that these little companies are good at is catching your eye and having, you know, putting the right words on those bags to entice you, and putting the right symbolism on there too, that's familiar to all of us, that kind of makes us gravitate. Our eyes just gravitate there. So exotic protein and ingredients. So Exotic proteins, you know, we think of our more common protein sources out there, beef, chicken. We look at even lamb has become, sort of mainstream. Venison, ocean whitefish. Salmon has become fairly common. There's several out there that we're used to seeing, and it's not to say that those protein sources are any better, but they're getting increasingly out there as far as some of these diets are concerned. So recently I've seen quail, which is interesting. I have seen kangaroo. Threw me for one there. It's just like, whoa, a kangaroo-based diet. Rabbit is becoming increasingly commonplace in these boutique-style diets, and you know, on down the line there. But outside of the animal flesh side of it, providing the animal flesh protein, we're seeing a lot of lentils, chickpeas, peas, and tapioca being used in these diets. And I'd like to really focus on these for a moment, because what the FDA and the AVMA found in particular is that diets that utilize these particular sources of nutrient tend to have higher incidence of dilated cardiomyopathy. And the initial sort of, excuse me, still a little bit of a lingering COVID cough there. The initial hypothesis for that was that perhaps these nutrient sources are lacking in the amino acid taurine. Taurine is an amino acid that is essential for the health of cardiac muscle. So that's called myocardium. It's absolutely essential to have adequate amounts of taurine in the diet, because it is essential to maintain the not just the muscle mass of the heart, but adequate physiology and adequate efficiency and contraction of that muscle. So taurine seems fine. So that doesn't seem to be the problem. What they're looking at right now is there is an essential component to the metabolism of taurine that involves B complex vitamins. And so what they're looking at now is there a deficiency potentially of B complex vitamins, or if there's not a deficiency, is there some interaction that's occurring that is minimizing the cofactor role of the B complex vitamins in the integration of taurine? So B complex vitamins are really uber important. They're antioxidants, they're immune boosters. They are among the best nutrients available to be part of a dietary regimen of both dogs and cats. But specifically as it pertains to cardiac health, they serve as cofactors in metabolic reactions that occur within the myocardium, and that involves taurine. And cofactors are molecules that essentially are catalysts and integral components to a metabolic reaction. They're not necessarily the focal point of it, but they're necessary to accomplish what the main molecule, in this case taurine, needs to accomplish to fulfill its optimal metabolic function. So there seems to be an interruption there. And again, they're looking at are the levels of B complex in these diets adequate, or is there a deficiency in their ability to serve as cofactors to facilitate the integration of taurine. So whatever the case, you know, the jury's still out on that, but we know that lentils, chickpeas, peas, and tapioca are not the best sources of nutrients, and a lot of these boutique-style diets have those in them. So again, you know, some of these diets do indeed have grains in them, but, we're going beyond grain-free here, because there's more to that story. Also in that mix of exotic proteins are the raw diets. I hate to say it. I know a lot raw is, it's become dogma among a lot of folks out there, pet owners out there that, they feel very strongly about it. I'm going to reiterate, again, no proven health benefit to feeding raw has been established. It's been looked at for 20 years now. We do know that there's some incidence of raw meat toxicity associated with it, maybe not a ton of it, and you know, that's certainly a good thing that we don't see a ton of it, but you know, I always used to maintain, well, why risk it if there's no real health benefit? Well, now we have another potential danger there, is that if you're feeding a raw diet, we could be also looking at potentially predisposing a dog to dilated cardiomyopathy. So raw is in that mix too, folks. Sorry to say raw folks, but that's just the truth of the matter. And then, of course, we know the G. The G is grain-free. And we don't have to go over that again. So what's going to happen here? So the original 16 list is out there. They've not repopulated the list. They've just sort of come out with this general statement of beg diets, just avoid them. Look for the three criteria that we discussed, starting with AFCO certification. Secondly, diets that engage in feeding trials that are published and also available to the public. And then lastly, the company having at least one veterinary clinical nutritionist on staff. If in doubt about any of these things, there should be a customer support number on any diet out there, and you can call them and ask them these questions, ask for proof and documentation of what they tell you, and just be educated and try to do the best you can to know what your pet is being fed. And always remember this, and I know it's been out there for some time that veterinarians like me don't know anything about nutrition, but you know, you trust your vet for a lot of things. You trust your vet to do surgery. You trust your vet to make medical recommendations. Your life is in your vet's hands very often. And yet, you know, many of you don't want to trust your vet to make nutritional recommendations on this notion that we don't get any nutritional training. Well, that's not true. We do. We get plenty of nutritional training in veterinary school. After we graduate, we get clinical nutritional training. After we finish our clinicals, we go to, like what I just went to, the North American Veterinary Conference and other conferences like that. I got at least 6 of my 26 credit hours in nutrition. There were advances in nutrition that I learned about. There were some things that I learned we shouldn't be doing anymore. Medicine evolves and knowledge evolves. That's why we do research. And we are a good resource for what your pet shouldn't and should not be eating. I will also say this, though. Maybe your vet has made a recommendation and that diet didn't necessarily agree with your dog. It happens. There is no perfect one diet for every pet out there. There are, you know, again, those three companies that I discussed that fulfill the criteria that I believe should be fulfilled in veterinary diets, and I'm going to recommend one of those three. Do I have a favorite among them? Yes, I do. I have recommended that favorite, and it didn't necessarily sit well on many occasions with some of my patients, and so the owners tried a different one of those three, and that one worked better. And so, you know, I look at this one technician that works for me. She cannot eat broccoli. Now, we think of broccoli as a wonderful food. I don't let my kids have their dessert until they eat their broccoli, because broccoli is good for them. It's a great source of nutrients and fiber, and it's good for most people. Well, this poor girl, if she has broccoli, she gets violently ill because she has a severe allergy to it. So in her case, broccoli, not the best idea. So not all rules apply to every person when it comes to dietary decisions and what agrees with a particular person's individual digestive tract and metabolism. And the same applies to dogs and cats. Start with the big three and then, you know, work your way from there. Match the life stage. You know, if you have a puppy or a kitten, feed puppy or kitten food. You have an adult dog, feed or cat, feed adult food. You're heading into the senior years, feed a senior food. If there's disease-specific nutrition that should be recommended, your veterinarian could make that recommendation based on the presence or lack thereof of disease. So, you know, that's the best really way to sift through this. You don't have to get overwhelmed by this stuff. You don't have to walk into Petco or PetSmart and see the myriad of diets out there, or get bombarded by your groomer or your breeder or, you know, the person at the pet spa that's checking in your dog that has no formal training whatsoever in medicine, yet, you know, wants to pass himself off as an expert in nutrition and try to push a diet on you. You know, just resist the temptation, ask the questions, go for the basic criteria, and make the best informed decision you can. It's not that difficult. But really nice to reconnect with everyone today. I hope to be back to work soon. But again, I am committed to coming to you, speaking with you as often as possible. Please do keep the emails coming. I came in with a very specific mission to talk about this topic. I knew it was going to be very involved, so I did not review any emails today. But as I just want to reiterate, the emails are a very important modality by which I like to address, I think, you know, pertinent, pithy questions on the air, at least one, or sometimes I'll use them as inspiration for a whole episode. So keep them coming. I will certainly give them a good review before I post my next episode. That email is comments@web-dvm.net, comments@web-dvm.com. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's it. Oh, .net. Let me listen to me. Maybe I have COVID brain. comments@web-dvm.net. That's comments@web-dvm.net. Keep those emails coming, and I look forward to speaking with you again. Have a great rest of your day.
Selling your car to Carvana is as easy as...
As easy as pie?
Sure. All you have to do is enter your license plate or VIN.
As easy as a stroll in the park.
Okay, then just answer a few questions and you'll get a real offer in seconds.
As easy as singing.
Why not? Schedule a pickup or drop off and Carvana will pay you that amount right on the spot.
As easy as playing guitar.
Actually, I find that kind of difficult. But selling your car to Carvana is as easy as...
Can be.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to get an instant offer today.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.